Food, plastics, building materials, cosmetics, and clothing. It seems there's not much hemp can't do, to hear advocates tell it. Farmers and consumers are quickly cluing in to what hemp can bring to their lives. 33 states have industrial hemp laws, and that includes Hawaii. Hemp in Hawaii took decades to get to the point where the UH pilot program 2 years ago was able to start. In this Hemp History Week, events on Maui are in full swing, and this weekend, Hilo hosts the inaugural Hawaii Hemp Conference. Today on Town Square, we're talking about hemp and what could be the next wave of agriculture in the post-sugar era. You can join us by calling 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Joining me today by phone are Doug Fine and Steve Rose. Doug Fine is a hemp farmer with a multi-ton harvest in Vermont under his belt. He's the author of Hemp Bound, and he collaborated on a recent UHC development proposal. He's on the Big Island to keynote at this weekend's Hawaii Hemp Conference. Steve Rose is the chief executive hempster, yes, you heard that right, of the new Maui Hemp Institute for Research and Innovation. Its mission is to promote and facilitate research and development for the growth of hemp and production of hemp-related products through education and advocacy. And in our studio, Melody Heidel is here. She is a research assistant on the Industrial Hemp Research Project at UH Manoa. She grew hemp with the 2015-16 project in Waimanalo and is currently helping the university to obtain a new DEA permit to continue and expand their research. She has advocated for hemp for 15 years and is now a consultant through her business, Hawaii Hemp Solutions. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for joining us today for Town Square.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Melody, I'm going to start with you, since you are based here in Hawaii. You've been working on this pilot program. What's the status of hemp in Hawaii?
Well, currently, no one is able to grow it because we are waiting for both the State Department of Ag and the university are awaiting DEA permits, and that's the chokehold on everything. So without that permission for either the state to really get the pilot program started that was enacted 2 years ago, no one can grow it yet. So the first time it was grown here was in 99 through a four-year pilot program that the legislature enacted. Then everything was put on hold again. The second pilot project that I participated in between 2014 and 16 out at the Waimanalo Research Station, again, it took a full year to get a DEA permit, which is the first step to growing hemp anywhere right now in the nation. And so we only had a year to grow hemp and see what we could determine. That was from 2015 to 16. The permit and the permission to do that was very specific, and so our permit ended in June of 2016, and that was right when we were starting to get some critical results. And we had to cut our research short. So at this point, in 2016, the Hawaii State Legislature passed a bill which was enacted by the governor, Act 228, to establish a pilot program through the Department of Agriculture, State Department of Agriculture, to allow farmers to be licensed to grow hemp. And that has been a very slow-moving process. At this point, to my understanding, the DOA is still awaiting their DEA permit, which again is the first thing that needs to happen so that we can bring seed in so that farmers can grow. So at this point, you cannot apply for a license yet, and the program has not actually started, and the funding set aside by the legislature is going to lapse at the end of June. So that's where things stand.
Thank you, Melody. Doug, you've just heard what she's talked about in terms of our history here with hemp in Hawaii. How does that fit into the national scene?
Right about the middle. There's two main categories of hemp programs now. States that are moving ahead full bore, those include states like Vermont, Kentucky, and Colorado, where at the very top, gubernatorial, state attorneys general, and especially state agriculture departments are saying, we recognize that this is going to be a valuable crop for farmers really out of the gate. And as a hemp farmer, I can vouch for that. So we're going to support it. And it's just like any other crop, and we're going to do it as whatever we need to do to make it viable under the limited federal law that allows. That's sort of tier one. The tier two states in the middle, and Hawaii is in this state, they passed terrific hemp bills. Hawaii's hemp bill is fantastic. And then have moved on to the regulatory process, the devil's in the details. And it really requires support at the top to move full bore. If the argument is being made that one is concerned about federal agencies taking what I think of as kind of a backward look, then it's going to move a little slower, but it'll get there. It takes support at the very top. And one other postscript, what makes the difference between the two types of states and moving forward at this stage has to do with a particular federal law that was passed in an omnibus provision last year and renewed this year, spending bill, that prohibits the Justice Department from interfering with state hemp programs, including interstate transfer between hemp programs. It's law of the land. It protects us in the hemp industry, and some states are applying it without issue. Not to tempt fate, but there's been no problems with my Vermont group, for instance, moving seed to Kentucky farmers directly through the Ag Department. Hawaii is choosing to say we actually need to import seeds and not use these domestically available seeds, even though we're protected under federal law. For some reason, just because we're scared or something, we're going to still try to involve federal agencies that don't need to be involved with this part of the process. And that's not me saying it. That's these several states are interpreting it that way. So I'd love to see Hawaii get there, and I think Hawaii will. I think the domestic cultivars, besides being more patriotic to support, are higher quality and, in many cases, allow replanting, okay, which importing seed does not.
Let me get Steve into this conversation a little bit there, Doug. Steve, we've been talking about where we are, where some of the other states are. Is Hawaii overly cautious about hemp, and why so if the demonstration of hemp's utility and its difference, say, from cannabis has been already made?
Well, considering there's, 30-some-odd states that have passed law and probably, I don't know, there's estimates of almost 20,000, 30,000 acres of hemp being planted on the mainland, this season. It's now a crop, not a research venture anymore. We kind of know enough to move forward. We're kind of moving forward very slowly. We're optimistic that at the federal level, there's going to be some changes in the law that will take hemp off of Schedule One. The Hemp Institute, the Maui Hemp Institute, is right now on an educational program. This radio show is important. We need to let the public know the difference between hemp and its cousins. We need people to know the value of hemp. We're promoting the biggest hempy hour in the Pacific tomorrow night on Front Street in Lahaina, where we've made a Maui hemp beer through Maui Brewing Company. They need 1,500 pounds of seed to run a brew thing. We have, we're showing the demand for the hemp seed once it's grown here. So it's really going to be a very sustainable, integrated industry in the visionary prospects moving ahead. And it's going to happen. The laws are going to change. They have. It's just a matter of some more patience. I have a little different perspective. I've been a hempster for 48 years now. Probably before my colleagues on the show were born, I've been into hemp and the advocacy of hemp. So I never in my life dreamed we'd be this close. So I see great progress from my perspective over 48 years. We need to urge people to go onto the Vote Hemp website and also to get in touch with our senators. Everybody knows Tulsi Gabbard's been a strong advocate of hemp along with her dad, Senator Mike Gabbard. But Senator Brian Schatz has come on board for the Vote Hemp, but he's not an advocate. We've been unable to really get a good response from Mazie Hirono. We need our state senators on our side.
Okay, Steve, I'm going to stop you because we've got a whole hour to talk.
Go for
it.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that we first give people some sense of what it is that you all know and that we've talked about in fits and spurts, which is the difference between marijuana and hemp and getting that really clear so people understand that. Can you explain that?
Sure. Basically, it's all a plant called cannabis. Cannabis has been around and found in graves 20,000 years old. The cannabis plant over years has diverged into many cousin plants, almost like mushrooms. You have white mushrooms and shiitake mushrooms you cook with. You have mushrooms that are used for medicinal purposes, and then you have mushrooms that are used for recreational purposes. And the cannabis family has kind of diverged in that same way. We have recreational marijuana, we have medical marijuana, and we have hemp. The big difference with hemp is that the active ingredient found in marijuana, which is THC, which is the one that gives the the high or the psychedelic effect is not present in hemp in any great quantity. You literally have to smoke almost a telephone pole of hemp to even try and get a buzz. So hemp basically has no THC. And without the THC factor, that's really what the government has been trying to crack down on. You know, that's all the scare and everything. We have an incredible history. It's called the Reefer Madness history, which started in 1937 when basically the business movement wanted to ban hemp because back in 1937, most of the patent medicines had cannabis in them. Clothing was made of cannabis. The ships used cannabis for rope and sails. It just goes on and on and on. But new industries were emerging from Mr. DuPont with new ways to make cotton. Mr. Hearst had bought up all the forests to convert from hemp paper to pulp paper. So they basically wanted to take the cannabis plant out of the picture. So they started a marijuana scare with the cousin of hemp. And when they finally got it passed, they banned the whole family. You know, hemp was kind of an innocent bystander. They used marijuana as kind of the way to scare people. And it was a very good, educated scare campaign.
Which has lasted up to this day, and why it's still sitting on the Schedule 1 of the DEA. I just want to remind our listeners that today we're talking about hemp and what's happening with hemp in Hawaii, what's happening with hemp nationally. We want to hear what you feel about hemp. Do you buy hemp products? Do you actively look for them? How do you feel about hemp as a crop for Hawaii for its future? 941-3689 is our number if you call us from Oahu. That's the number to use, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. It is Hemp History Week. We've just gotten a whole lot of history about hemp. How do you feel about the cousin of cannabis that doesn't have any THC or very low amounts and why it's sitting on the Schedule 1 of the DEA? A lot of folks on our panel today would like to see that change. In fact, their livelihoods may depend on it. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Doug, I want you to jump in here a little bit too, because there are some states that have been suing over this. And I think the most recent one to join the suit was, what, North Carolina?
That may be true. I hadn't heard that. But yes, the lawsuit, are you talking about on the CBD and cannabinoid front?
Right. Well, that and yeah, also just trying to get the separation of the the hemp use and being able to extract that from what may be happening with medical marijuana, what may be happening with pot in general.
That's right. That's a really interesting development. The federal provision that legalized hemp for research purposes, in other words, the reason why farmers that are part of a state hemp program can feel protected under federal law today, it clearly states that all parts of the plant are part of that provision. What some of the federal agencies are doing, and, you know, this is, if you look at it from a high altitude, it's turf protecting. It's folks with a budget, and if they don't spend their budget, they lose it. And so it's immoral because of how important hemp is to farmers. I say that personally, but also it's really important to Hawaii's farmers as well for a lot of reasons, special reasons having to do with Hawaii's need for food and energy independence. But the federal agencies are clinging to their turf and their budgets, and so when you have lawyers, they're going to try and make arguments. And the fallacious argument that the DEA has been trying to make, good folks at the DEA, hello to all our DEA folks out there, you're doing a generally good job, but please step away from cannabis, hemp, especially hemp. They're arguing that the flower part of the plant, the flowering part of the plant, which could be psychoactive in that type of cannabis, is also under the purview of Schedule 1. That's clearly contrary to the intent of the Farm Bill, and it's just wrong to be trying to muddy the waters of this important industry. Just that flower side is approaching the $200 million value nationwide now, and in our Vermont project, it's how we're paying our bills is through our project is a flower-infused hemp seed oil, all of which we grew on the farm.
You brought up the Farm Bill from 2014, which was done, obviously, in the Obama administration. As you see the changes happening and a very different perspective with the Trump administration, I know Steve is very hopeful that somehow this is going to be changing. Are you also as hopeful?
The full commercial legalization bill that everybody's waiting for in the hemp industry is late. It was supposed to be introduced in the spring, and there was supposedly that the political climate has played a role in what's holding it up. We are going to get there. I don't think there's any difference between this administration and any others, unless there would be some risk of a veto, which would be horrible. But there's full support in Congress for everything to do with hemp. It's a bipartisan issue, and the sponsor of the bill, the initial sponsor of the bill, is a freshman Republican from a dry county, and Christian County is the name of it in Kentucky, Jamie Comer. So it's a bipartisan bill, and it will pass when it comes forth. Meanwhile, this industry is growing 25% under these research restrictive conditions that we've been talking about.
All right, Melody, I want you to jump back into the conversation. We've been talking a lot about the history, giving this some context for everyone. Clearly, you had feet on the ground working on this project in 2015 and 16. For you now, looking at what seems to be a bridled effort, what is still happening despite some of the constraints that you're feeling? And do you see anyone who's willing to push that envelope a little bit and say, but we already have permission to be able to do this, as Doug has talked about?
On the state level here in Hawaii? I think what Doug kind of alluded to earlier is pretty accurate, that people in Hawaii in the positions of making these decisions are really leery and hesitant of not towing the DEA line. So like much of the battle we've had in Hawaii for 20 years, it's partly re-educating people about the commercial and agricultural purpose of this plant versus the inaccuracy of it being, you know, closely tied with its hallucinogenic cousin, as Steve said. So I'm not sure how to say that. I think most of the push now is coming from Hawaii farmers who are really interested in growing this crop.
Interested in maybe a sugar replacement and something that is that
sure,
go
sugar,
huge.
Sugar replacement, multi-use crop that can be more lucrative per acre than many of the crops that are currently grown because of the variety of uses that hemp can be used for, whether it's seed for nutrition or oil, which then can be used for plastic-based materials, phytoremediation, removing toxins from the ground. So if you want to repurpose some of that Maui ag land and remove the atrazine that was used for decades in sugarcane and pineapple planting so that it can be a safe playground or used for organic agriculture, hemp can do that. The fiber can be used for building materials to build our houses, locally grown.
We've talked about that.
Right, and all that.
Isn't there a whole house in North Carolina that's built from everything hemp?
Yeah, and I believe there's one on Maui.
Yes.
We have a mansion on Maui built of hemp,
right,
actually.
<yeah. laughs> So, you know, the fact that this crop is so versatile, and 1 to 5 pounds of seed planted in an acre can yield 1,000 pounds of seed. Hawaii can have 2 to 3 growing seasons compared to places on the mainland, and that has to do with our having a 12-hour or longer photo period here in Hawaii. Hemp needs a long daylight length to grow well, or to grow to its, you know, full capacity. And we have that. We can grow between February and July and August, and it's a 3-month crop. So in 3 months, you can have a full crop, you know, if you're growing for fiber.
And then turn it again.
10-foot tall in 12 weeks. Yeah, plant another crop. You can get 2 or 3 crops. So it really can help our Hawaii farmers be able to afford to farm, first of all. You know, they can plant a small amount of hemp and still be growing other things and just get that little boost of an income in a way that, you know, other traditional crops can't quite reach that level.
We've got callers on the line who all want to talk to you, and we've got a full bank at the moment. If you would like to join us, keep trying. 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, 941-3689. If you're calling us from the neighbor islands, if you're listening through the live stream someplace else, you can get in on the conversation at 877-941-3689. Going to Paul, calling us from Maui. Aloha, Paul. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha, Beth Ann and Steve and everybody. What a great conversation. You know, the whole thing is just legalize pot and get it over with. And then we'd be in step with the other states that are legalizing it. And also, you know, we could do the hemp thing and the heck with all this other nonsense. Just do it.
All right, Paul.
We've got all this land. And we need to keep it in agriculture. That's the most important thing. The Valley Isle continues to be the Valley Isle. And that all that land that's owned by A and B stays in agriculture, doesn't get developed. Well, maybe a little bit of affordable housing, but that's about it. But yeah, legalized pot, that'll be the whole solution.
That just takes care of the whole thing. You don't even have to fuss with it.
Yep.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Going now to Sue, calling us from Pahoa. Aloha, Sue. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. In addition to... Whoops, are we here?
You're right there. We can hear you.
Thank you. A lot of static on my side. In addition to the moralistic opposition, what industries are lobbying against us to give us an idea... against this, to give us an idea of where the money trail lies and who benefits from suppressing hemp?
And potentially who you might take off your list? Is that what you're asking?
Well, there's a lot of good reasons.
Okay. Let me see if we can get Doug to give you an answer for that.
Personally, I think, and thanks to the caller for the question, I think that the old battles are over and that there's not a major outside non-hemp industry holding up hemp. What I think is the holdup is one sort of politicians that aren't on quite yet on the right side of history. They don't get it. They haven't gotten the memo of how important this is, that this is the next Silicon Valley. They'd rather just not bother with it. They stick it in some kind of category. So I don't think it's a conspiracy. But I will say this, to force the importation of seeds and to delay that, delay the use of domestic, of the rise of a domestic industry that wants to support one another, that raises a lot of eyebrows, and that has to do with an agricultural model that I think personally is serfdom, which is suddenly farmers can't replant their seeds. When did that start? I thought, well, this is a freedom to farm, this is America. So that to me is a greater concern. I don't think there's like major pharmaceutical support. One thing though to keep a quick eye on is that in every state, a particular company does have lobbyists that are trying to restrict hemp, saying that they should be the only ones allowed to provide hemp. And so for folks who, again, are freedom to farm type folks like me, the thing to keep an eye open for in legislation is making sure that it's a level playing field so that small farmers and big farmers all have the right to cultivate this important and lucrative crop.
Maybe not such a level playing field as just an open gate.
Right. That's right.
All right, we're going to go now to Michelle calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Michelle. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes, hello. Aloha. I am definitely a proponent of hemp. One of the things that I own is a couple of articles of hemp cloth clothing, and it's wonderful, and I would love to see hemp grown locally and used locally to create clothing, so that Hawaii can become more self-sustaining with more and more things like our food and textiles. And I could see a whole industry in building and in all kinds of ways being used for hemp. And I really appreciate you guys' education on hemp.
Can I chime in
thanks,
here?
Thanks, Michelle. Go ahead.
You know, on Maui here, the Maui Hemp Institute for Research and Development has close ties with the Hawaii Farmers Union United. Our Hawaii Farmers Union now has chapters in every state, and they are really the cutting edge of sustainable farming in Hawaii. We've been working with many local farmers here where hemp is going to be a key component to making their farms very successful. One of the things that kind of gets passed over, which is a big problem on Maui and other islands, is the wind. We lost all the willy-willy tree windbreaks. We have hemp cultivars that will grow 10, 12 feet in a couple of weeks and act as windbreaks. Some of our farmers are just waiting to expand their farms using the hemp as windbreaks. And as we talked about before, you know, there's so many uses to the plant that any small farmer, you know, will be able to sell their crop, you know, their small crops. That's one of the reasons we're here on Maui, are kind of educating the public. Our theme this year is Educate an Island. You know, making people understand that hemp is, you know, not marijuana. We have hemp beer and hemp foods being featured tomorrow at the Lahaina Town Party so people can experience hemp and realize it's not going to make them high. And it's actually very high in protein, high in omega-3s from the seed. And it just goes on and on and on, all the benefits of it.
All right, we're going to take a few more callers. If you want to join us, we're talking about hemp, what's happening with it here in Hawaii, and how you feel about hemp as a potential replacement crop for sugar. And just in general, do you use hemp products? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Chris calling us from the North Shore. Aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. I am a supporter of hemp, but I do have some concerns. I also grow medical cannabis, and I'm worried about cross-pollination and possibly ruining a medical crop for a patient.
Okay, good question. Should he not be growing both? Or is he concerned about what might be drifting his way?
I would jump in on that. You know, cross-pollination is probably one of the first research grants we're going to look for to actually see if it actually happens. We've heard experts on both sides of it saying it's a threat, it's not a threat. Luckily, most of the medical marijuana that's being planned to be grown here is being grown indoors, so cross-pollination does not become a threat. As far as huge 1,000-acre hemp fields billowing hemp pollen all over the islands, well, we're many years away from that. And I think by the time we get to that stage, we'll have figured out, is there cross-pollination? Some of the growers on all the islands agree that, you know, they can grow hemp and the marijuana species together. It's a matter of timing and knowing what you're doing. So, you know, these are issues. The cross-pollination was used on both sides of the hemp argument over the past 100 years. The advocates for it would basically say it's going to cross-pollinate to kind of attack the marijuana growers, and the marijuana growers would use it as a fear. I mean, I think one of our legislative bills was defeated by support from the marijuana growers in the islands because they were afraid of cross-pollination. So this is something that, you know, we've created a research institute to look into, and these are questions we need to answer. But we need to get some hemp in the ground first before we can do any of this, and that's okay. Our big goal.
I just want to ask you about getting hemp in the ground. I want to get you and Melody to talk about this too, because we had a shy caller, that's somebody who doesn't want to go on the air but has a question. Mm-hmm. And this person says that, you know, people don't want to live near hemp fields because of large amounts of pollen released by hemp plants. So, you know, people who have allergies or people who have other respiratory concerns, the shy caller is raising the question, how concerned should people be about the pollen released from the hemp plants? Mel, do you want to tackle that first?
You know, that's an interesting question. In our field study, it was very small, and obviously it wasn't located near any residences. So that wasn't something that we took into thought as we were doing it. Just considering it now, I mean, what comes to mind is, would it have any of a higher pollen drift than some of the other agricultural crops that are currently being grown? And would that be a concern for someone battling allergies? So I certainly have empathy for that question. Direct answer, you know, I just don't know. I think also it can depend on the purpose that the crop is being grown for. For instance, when we planted three varieties, and one of them was specifically a fiber variety versus a seed variety. And that fiber variety grew to the final height without producing many flowers at all. It just doesn't get to that stage compared to the seed or the medical variety where you're wanting those flowers so you can get that product out.
Right,
of
Melody,
it.
I mean, you're making the point that hemp is not hemp
right.
any more than medical marijuana may be the same thing. All the way there. There are different strains for different purposes, and clearly if you're talking about something that's being made for its fiber, you may have a whole lot less flowers, mm-hmm. and that might be something depending upon what its use,
you know,
is,
and
that would be brown, right?
The flower presence on hemp, it's nothing compared to a mango tree or an avocado tree, you know, in terms of the quantity
right.
you see on this plant when it's in full bloom.
I heard someone say right in there. Was that you, Doug, or was that you, Steve?
That was me, Doug.
Both of us, actually.
I believe that Melody is 100% right. And I have a lot of sympathy because I'm an advocate for the economic value of all sides of the plant and the benefit to public safety as well. And so I understand concerns and have done extensive research into all sides of the plant. And one wants to use best agricultural practices in any crop, but there in the Canadian's 20-year industry, there hasn't yet been a case of cross-pollination. And as far as 20-year hemp industry, that is, and as far as getting into Hawaii and getting plant seeds in the ground, one thing that Hawaii really has going for it is the absolute, you know, passionate advocacy of a number of key elected officials. I mean, the Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, it has introduced a cannabis legalization bill, and she's prepared a message for us for the Hawaii Hemp Conference in Hilo this weekend, also graciously sponsored by the Hawaii Farmers Union, of which I'm a proud member, and Colorado Hemp Company are the producers of this and are bringing in really the whole world of of hemp to try to educate folks here. And Congresswoman Gabbard's father, Senator Mike Gabbard as well, and Cynthia Thielen, Representative Cynthia Thielen, going back to the 90s, really working hard to make this happen. And
yeah, people have
no
referred to her as being
it.
The godmother of hemp. Forgive me for interrupting you, but we've got other callers coming in.
She is.
And we want to make sure we can get everybody into the conversation. If you'd like to join us, we've got a phone line open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If somebody beats you to it, just keep calling us. We'll get everybody through. We're talking about hemp today on Town Square. Going now to Angelina calling us from Kahului. Are you there?
I am here.
Okay.
Aloha.
So aloha. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. Great conversation. And my comment is that I support having hemp here, growing it, and I think it could be a great thing for our economy. You know, Hawaii has gotten to be a place that's so expensive for people. There's so many local people who have had to move away. And this could be an opportunity for people who want to stay here to get into something that could be, you know, profitable for them. The farmers that are already here can finally make a profit. And, you know, we're already buying hemp at Costco. We're buying it online for ourselves, clothing, pets. Why not be ahead of the game here or get into the game here in Hawaii? I think we have good resources here, and I think it could be a good ripple effect here in the state.
Thank you so much for the call. So could this be not only just new sugar, but new pineapple? Is that what you farmer folks are saying?
It's even better than that. It's Maui Brewing Company's Hemp ESB beer that's now on tap at 15 of the finest restaurants on Maui this week to celebrate Hemp History Week. Maui Brewing Company stepped forward and said, we want to see a local hemp seed source, so we're going to support you. We got the hemp from Canada for this first batch, but, you know, we're showing the viability. You know, hundreds and hundreds of people are going to have hemp for the first time this week. It'll be in their beer, but it gives an incredible taste, and you got some additional benefits to it. There's so many uses for it, and it's a matter of, you know, like the caller said, you know, opportunities for local companies. You know, we buy a lot of hemp seed. A lot of our food companies make hemp bars and hemp pasta and hemp pies, but they bring in all the hemp seed for it, and it's very expensive.
Right. Now, I want to stop you right there, too, because she was also making the point that people can go online and buy all kinds of hemp products, cosmetics, clothing, you name it, and they're already there waiting to buy this. They're a captive market. They want to be able to be served. And if they can't be served locally, they're going to order it online, or if they're lucky, find it at a warehouse supplier. I'm going to go now to Craig calling us from the Big Island. Craig, you have an interesting question.
Hi, thank you. First of all, thank you for this conversation. I'm kind of relatively new to it and excited to hear about it and share many of the sentiments that everybody else has shared. My question is this. I'm on the Big Island. I have 200 acres here, agricultural property. It used to be sugarcane. I'd love to support this. I'd love to get involved with it. What are the best steps or best strategy I can take to help support this to manifestation?
Craig, you are going to be one popular guy.
Can I handle that one?
Go ahead. Go ahead. Please go ahead, Doug.
I would say celebrate wherever you are, guys. Celebrate Hemp History Week. And on the Big Island, the Hawaii Hemp Conference is free at the Hilo Hawaiian Hotel for the expo and the booths. And if you want to come hear the experts, it's a $99 weekend thing. And it's a great first step. Also, I want to say that there is U.S. grown hemp in Hawaii products already. I have to say very proudly that our family Green Vermont Hemp is in Spa Lele's, Lele V Spas on the Big Island and Maui in Lahaina. She graciously brought in our first hemp product and is mixing it with her own massage oils, lipsticks. And so U.S. hemp, not just imported hemp, but at least mainland hemp is coming in. Imagine when those carbon miles go away. I would love Lele V to be saying she's using Hawaiian grown hemp, and that will come.
All right. Well, Craig, it sounds like you need to go get some information there, but you've got a lot of people who are willing to help you. Melody, you wanted to chime in, too.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up on what Doug said. You know, the second step is to keep putting the pressure on our officials to get it legal to grow hemp in Hawaii, whether that's, you know, contacting the state DOA, lobbying your state representative, senators, our congressional delegation. We need to keep this push going that, one, we want the program started here as soon as possible. But again, that's contingent, at least in how our state is looking at it now. When I say state, I mean government officials. They're looking at following and towing, you know, the current DEA regulation process. And so helping put the public pressure on to get that to manifest sooner than later so that farmers can get licensed and grow. And then the flip side being what Doug talked about earlier, do we want to look at this at from a different slant of just going ahead and following through on what some of the federal regulations currently say about being able to grow it? But main point is, keep pressuring your elected officials to make this happen, because the farmers want to do it. They were all excited about it at an ag conference that the Hawaii Farmers Union United did last October. The main question was, when can we start? And it was really disappointing when they heard, well, not yet.
Well, whether it happens, it certainly might be there might be a very big impact that people can make when they start to say that they're buying this stuff elsewhere and letting our officials know that there is a market for this, if only, in fact, farmers in Hawaii could grow it. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about hemp in Hawaii? Would you be buying Hawaii hemp if it were available? Are you already buying products and are part of that captive audience looking for hemp? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Are you a would-be farmer for whom this idea sounds really attractive? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to David calling us from Hilo. Aloha, David. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Aloha, and thank you for putting this show on. I just wanted to make a comment that I believe that the law in 1937, the Marijuana Tax Act, was it's the biggest conspiracy in the world of in the history of the world. And the fact is that the real intent why they made that law was to stifle the hemp industry. The hemp industry had been going on just like every other major industry for thousands of years. And then all of a sudden in 1937, they pushed this through Congress real fast. There was no evidence that this had ever caused any medical issues, any medical problems. It's not even an actual drug. They continue to lie about that, saying it's a drug when it's actually a natural herb. And the real reason that they don't want the people to produce this is because it would set us all free on all these different needs that we have, including our industrial needs for all these substances. And the fact is that this is why it's made illegal because of the competitive
David,
power.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second because we talked at the beginning of the show a little bit about that history that you just reminded us of. And in case you missed it, you might want to listen to the replay tonight at 7 o'clock, or you might also want to get it off of our website when we post it there. You can get it as a podcast. Thanks very much for calling. Going now to Dee Dee. I think she's not on the line, but Dee Dee from Kahuku called in saying that she eats hemp cereal and you can buy it at Tamora's, and I'm sure they're happy to have that comment out there too. So you can find it in little places. You have to look around if you're looking.
You can find it in Foodland.
You can find, well, there you go. So take
Foodland
a look.
Carries hemp seed, hemp bars, hemp milk. Foodland has been on the cutting edge of carrying hemp products in the islands. You can find hemp hearts at Safeway, at Times.
And I would imagine Whole Foods, too.
And, of course, Whole Foods, all your local health foods. It's a common item now.
It's not difficult to find, is the point that you're making. Just if you
exactly.
want it, you can go find it. The question is, would you like it to be made from Hawaii hemp or at least U.S. hemp as opposed to those manufacturers who have to bring it in from elsewhere? Going now to Bill calling us from Kona. Aloha, Bill. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I had a question about the medical marijuana. And I'm wondering if the production of hemp would cause it to cross-pollinate and possibly render the medical marijuana a little less potent.
Okay, Bill, forgive me for interrupting you. You're now about the third or fourth person who is either on or offline asked that question. So, guys, if you can just give it a really quick hit about so they can have an answer now, although you can get a fuller answer earlier on in the program if you listen to the replay, Bill. Doug,
well, again,
Melody,
it's a question. It's a question under debate. There is no hard scientific research either way. The current trend, which Doug and I are in agreement, is that it's not an issue based on the way the marijuana is growing and the hemp is growing. But that's part of the future. That's part where we need to go. And it'd be years before any of this would actually come into reality in the islands, where there is enough hemp to even test for any kind of drift. So we got time. We'll fix it.
Okay, Melody, I want to bring you into here a little bit, too, because very clearly we're getting people who are very concerned because they've waited very long for dispensaries to open, and we're still waiting. Right. And for people who need medical marijuana and want to make sure that what they're getting it is appropriate, that's why there are testing labs. That's why the way they will be grown, the medical marijuana will be grown, is very different from the way you're suggesting that hemp will be grown.
Right. And with hemp, I mean, hemp equally will be tested for its THC level. There's very specific requirements for that in our state program and on the federal level, too, I'm sure, where any plant, they test to make sure that it's staying under the acceptable THC level, which is, 0.3% THC at this point. So that's one aspect of it. I'd like to bring up something that not everyone may be aware of. While hemp and recreational and medical marijuana that contains THC, they're separate, but hemp is actually the source of the non-THC cannabidiol CBD, which is the medicinal component that helps with things like seizures. So hemp actually is the and Doug or Steve, if you know a little more about this, let me know. This is something that was raised to me, kind of recently. But my understanding is it is the flowers from the hemp plant is the source of the pure CBD that has no THC component. And so hemp, legalizing hemp growth can actually also help bolster the facet of medical marijuana for people who want medicinal benefit without having the THC part, which can help with things like nausea. For cancer patients, the THC part helps with that, I believe, and the appetite. So there's kind of these two separate avenues of medicinal application of the cannabis plant.
And there was a huge breakthrough.
Steve, go ahead.
There was a huge breakthrough this year. There's a Kentucky a company called Ananda Hemp that grew 500 acres, literally in Mitch McConnell's backyard of his constituency in old tobacco farms, of a new cultivar of hemp that was developed over 18 years to be high in CBDs, almost no trace amounts of THC. But this is a full spectrum. This has all the cannabinoids. We talk about THC and CBD, but there are hundreds of cannabinoids that trigger our bodies are wired for cannabinoids. We produce cannabinoids even without taking them from other things. It's part of our whole bodily system of functioning, and the science on that is just beginning to open up. But the hemp medicines, half of my farmer friends are now taking these CBD medicines for their aches and pains, and I won't repeat all their claims because I'll get into doctor trouble, but it's amazing what it's doing on the CBD level for curing. It's created a whole new category called hemp medicine in the industry. So we're very optimistic about, getting that in the soil here also.
Okay, forgive me for interrupting you, but we've got callers on the line. A lot of folks want to talk to you. Going now to Sarah, calling us from Kona. Sarah, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I hear you're looking for an investment opportunity or two in hemp.
That's correct. I'm very fond of hemp products, particularly hemp clothing, actually. And I don't have a whole lot of money, but I'm just wondering if there is any opportunity that you're aware of, or will there be that to invest in hemp growing in the state?
Steve and Doug, a lot of people are probably thinking about the same thing.
That's what's so great about Hemp History Week. Please come to the Hawaii Hemp Conference, because that's exactly what we're going to talk about. We have panels on branding existing Hawaiian products with hemp. Imagine the value added of adding that superfood coming from the hemp seed oil. And since we've been so lucky to have callers calling in for so many different islands, including all over the Big Island, I'll say if you're looking for hemp products, I personally will feed you a supply that I brought for my morning yogurt in a giant gallon Ziploc from our Vermont-grown hemp seeds. If you want to taste them, they're in Hilo. And please come from all over. And that those kind of investment opportunities are what we're going to talk about. And very quickly, looking ahead, this is where the real investment has to come, is in the production side after harvest. If you want to process hemp, if you want to package it and brand it, that's where the infrastructure has to be developed. And to really get people, especially futurists and techie-type people excited, here's where it's really going. We already have, and I'll bring samples this weekend, the hemp plastic. So we don't need petroleum-based, chemical-based plastics anymore. You can use hemp fiber to make plastic that can in turn 3D print. Now, why is that important for Hawaii? Imagine reducing the cost of importing industrial car part replacements, let's say. You're just printing them out in the shop. This is where this is all heading. This sounds like a dream today, but there are companies that have this kind of technology, and if there are interested investors, let's keep this dialogue going. It's all over Hemp History Week. It's the time to talk about this.
All right, we're going to go back to something a little bit more close to the ground and to the hearts of a lot of people. James is calling us from Nu'uanu, asking about hemp posing an invasive species threat. James,
it's
are you there?
No more.
Hang on, James, let me get James in first. James, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi there.
Hi, yeah, so I'm very interested in this discussion as well as many of our listeners. And, yeah, I just wanted to put it out there. What risk does hemp as a crop pose to Hawaii as a potential invasive species? And my second question is, since we talked about potentially replacing hemp on Maui in place of sugarcane, what's the difference with the water use demand for hemp compared to sugarcane, and what effect would that possibly have on the island's water resources?
All right, I'm getting Melody nodding at me at least about your second question. Do you want to answer him about that first?
Yeah, well, I can at least speak to hemp's use of water. I don't know the data on how much sugarcane uses, but hemp is extremely drought tolerant. And what we found in our project, we actually played a little bit with, you know, what's the lowest quantity of water that we can use to get the plant to still produce what we were looking towards. And it's just so, it hardly needs anything. And in fact, if you were in a fairly, an area that had some regular rainfall, you might not need to supplement it at all. What we found in ours, because it was very sunny and very hot and very dry when we were first planting, you know, we did some very minimal irrigation. I mean, I think it was something like 10 millimeters a week, and mostly it was important for the propagation the first few days. And by week one or two, we really didn't need to water much at all. And it grows so quickly, and because you plant it close, its leaf growth shades the ground. And so there were times where I'd go out to the field, and outside the edge of our field, it was just like, you know, hard pan cake, dry as a stone. And I'd go underneath where our hemp plants were, and it would be moist down about 2 inches. So it doesn't need a lot of water, and so it definitely is a benefit in that sense compared to sugarcane.
All right, and what about the question concerning invasive species? Or would it be considered one? We've had lots of things brought to Hawaii with very good ideas, only to find out later it wasn't one.
Well,
Steve?
The hemp crop comes and goes because it is a very short four-term growth period. You know, invasive species, I wish people were talking about the real invasive species. I mean, this is perhaps one, but our farmers are being devastated by deer. You know, 100,000 deer, that's an invasive species. There are all kinds of plants, you know. And we do have invasive species programs that would take out any small hemp plants that wandered into places that were being worked on, but we need to handle that as a big topic and get all the invasive species out.
Okay, well, that could be a whole other show.
You got it.
At the moment, we've got other callers who still want to get in, and we still have a few minutes left. Kimo calling us from Waialua. Aloha, Kimo. Welcome to Town Square.
Oh, thank you. Aloha kākou, everybody.
Aloha.
And Melody, I love your parents, and I'm well, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. I love them too.
my question is, What kind of yield per acre are we talking about? Not only, you know, masses of, you know, poundage or tonnage, but income-wise. I know a lot of farmers are interested because of this, and is it a cash crop?
Yes.
It's a cash crop, but we have no numbers because we have no hemp in the ground, and it depends, again, what you're growing it for, fiber, seed, food, biofuel. You know, how many acres you need. These are a whole bunch of questions that we need to begin to answer. It is profitable if you can get your hemp to market. So markets are very important. It's not something we're going to export to the mainland and compete with 1,000-acre fields in Colorado and Kentucky. We have to develop a local source for our hemp. But as that comes together, even just feeding our own people, omega-3 oils out of hemp seed are better than fish oil.
So okay, I want to just stop you there for one quick second, because I know, Doug, you already have a crop under your belt there. Can you speak to this a little bit in terms of what you've been able to see in the way of remuneration and just different types that you have for different reasons?
Yes, thank you, Beth Ann. That was a great question from the caller. Briefly, I'm proud to say we've almost paid back our last season 2016 year's investment from our market research revenue. We don't call it sales because the federal legalization is for market research, and that is what we are doing, researching the market. And the most viable market is to be value-added. And this, I think, is relevant for Hawaii's farmers, and something I'll talk about at the conference this weekend, is that on 23 acres, we had a multi-ton harvest. You can produce up to 1,000 pounds per acre. We're getting about 1,000 pounds per acre of seed on our best acreage, which is, I'm proud to say, higher than the Canadian average, and perhaps beginner's luck. And so from that, we're able to process a value-added product that at 100 milliliters of pressing those seeds into a healthy oil and infusing it with the flowers, product called hemp in hemp, because it's the flowers in the seed oil. It's potentially a six-figure crop if we sell through, and we're getting some traction. I mean, we have market research revenue coming in from that. So it's all new, and it's true. We have to work hard not just to be the farmers, but the entrepreneurs in the digital age. We're going for what we call vertical integration, where you're every step of the process. You're not just saying goodbye to it at harvest. You're saying, what's our unique product? And in the case of Hawaii, that might be taking an already valuable mac nut package, sprinkling it with hemp hearts, nutritious hemp hearts, and there you've got even a bigger value.
So right, you're talking about a lot of collaboration and a lot of value added that happens, and that could happen right here in Hawaii without having to send anything away and then re-import it. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes of the show. Melody, you wanted to jump in here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I just wanted to share. We did get some data on yield production for Hawaii specifically during our project, and Kimo asked about that. So we found that based on having 2 to 3 crops a year in Hawaii compared to one on the mainland, you could produce between 27 and 38 tons dry weight of stalks, that's the fiber, and between 31 and 35 tons of dry weight of the stems and leaves per year. Leaves can be used for things like animal forage. It's got 21% protein content here in Hawaii when we tested that. And then in terms of seeds, like Doug said, one crop can yield about 1,000 pounds per acre. So here in Hawaii, and we found this with ours, we could actually get 2.5 tons of seed per acre per year. And there are even more lucrative products like supercapacitors.
We've got lots of folks on the line. I'm afraid we're not going to be able to get to you. But we've got Cynthia Thielen on the line with us now. Aloha.
Hi, it's Representative Cynthia Thielen.
Good to talk to you. We've got just about 30 seconds.
I want to thank Melody Heidel and Doug Fine. And I would like to say to our head of the Agriculture Department, get moving so our farmers can grow hemp.
All right. Thank you so much for the call. And just before we leave you, we had a very quick question. What type of waste is produced from hemp-based manufacturing? People are looking for the up and the downside. Can you give them a quick answer?
Zero. Every part of the plant, including the roots, can be used for medicine. So there's zero waste.
All right, that's Steve. Melody,
I agree with Steve. There's multiple uses of all the products. Even if you grow for one purpose, you can reuse the secondary product for something else.
And this is Doug. We thought we were going to have leftover fiber, and we're shocked at the demand for the fiber. It's not as value-add. We don't get as much for it, but people want it.
All right, I want to thank all three of you for joining me for this hour for Town Square. Thanks to Doug Fine and to Steve Rose, and in the studio with me, Melody Heidel. We'll talk more about hemp. Thanks very much for joining us today for Town Square. If you missed any of the program, you can always catch it at 7 p.m., or you can get it off of our website, hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.